This sounds like art.
Art.
Art. Art and his take on it.
I'm an artist of liberation.
Everybody wants to be an artist.
Art history.
Art history.
The making of art.
Art history with Lorraine Kipiotis.
Did you hear the news recently that art historians had finally figured out where the bridge was that's seen in the background of the Mona Lisa? There was much excitement. It got me thinking about the fact that the art world is full of all these mysteries, isn't it, that art historians are obsessed with solving. I mean, I wonder, do you ever spend time looking at artwork wondering, well, who's that person? What's that in the background? What are those people in the corner actually doing? Well, I asked Nightlife's resident art historian, Lorraine Kipiotis from the National Art School, to talk about mysteries in art with us tonight. She immediately suggested we talk about the Dutch painter Johannes Vermeer. He was once nicknamed the Sphinx of Delft. He's known as one of the art world's most enigmatic and mysterious painters. Lorraine, hello. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Hi, it's good to be here, Suzanne.
You describe yourself as one of Vermeer's most ardent admirers, don't you?
Oh, he is just an amazing painter. I actually always refer to him as a painter's painter. You know, he really thought about what it meant to be an artist and what it meant to be an artist in his particular time. So, but he's, you know, we know so little about him. What we've gleaned about him essentially comes from what we can find out about his paintings and from others' records as well.
Now, I know he only produced about 36 paintings in his life. 28 of these works from around the globe are actually together in Amsterdam at the Rijksmuseum for a once-in-a-lifetime exhibition. You would have liked a ticket to that, wouldn't you?
Oh, my gosh. You know, Suzanne, I almost went. I had everything, all my ducks lined up. I'd sort of looked at airfares. I'd looked at hotels, thought, right, that's it. I was just about to ask for time off. And then I thought, oh, I better see if I can actually get tickets to the show. No, sold out. It's a sellout show. It was on for 4 months up until the 4th of June, and no one, you can't get the ticket for love or money.
Wow. Well, those lucky people who did get a ticket,
yeah,
I guess.
Absolutely.
I guess that just shows he's got some very serious fans. Okay, so Lorraine, you reckon he's a mystery. What do we actually know?
Okay, well, what we know is that he was born in Delft, which is a small town in Holland, lived in Delft, died there as well, maybe left it twice, once to go to Amsterdam, once to go to Gouda. And, you know, and he probably only moved across the same square in Delft as well. He married at 21. He actually married a Catholic. He was in a Protestant country. He was Protestant. And he had to convert to Catholicism in order to marry Catharina Bolnes. And I guess, you know, what we do know, we know from a lot of other people's records about him, because he didn't write, there are no extant letters, there are no extant records about him. And he, as you mentioned, only produced around, you know, 35 to 37 paintings. Actually, two of those are under contention. But, you know, and 28 of them are all being shown in the one place.
Now, I understand he had 15 children. I'm sure his wife did a lot of the labour, but how did he have any time to paint?
I know. It's a wonder. It's a wonder he had any time nor space to paint.
Yes.
His wife did give birth to 15 children. 11 of those lived. Mm-hmm. So he would have had, you know, any amount of kids in the household while he was trying to work. But when you look at his paintings, you can actually see that he's painted within one or two, perhaps three rooms in the very large house that he lived in. So I guess those, you know, they would have been out of bounds for the kids. And also, Suzanne, when you look at the people within his paintings, I've got no doubt that he used, you know, perhaps his wife and some of his children, especially his daughters, to actually model for him, as well as servants.
So do we know anything else about him?
Yeah, well, we do. Whilst he died in quite dire financial circumstances, I mean, Catharina Bolnes writes, she kept a bit of a record, and she wrote that there was a ruinous war with France that precluded him from actually selling his own work, but also those of other masters. He was a bit of an art dealer as well. But those last 4 or 5 years, yes, he was in dire financial straits, so much so that he actually had to give two paintings to a baker to which he owed 4 years' worth of bread money. So can you imagine sort of owing 4 years' worth of bread money to someone, and he could only pay him with paintings?
So, are those some of the paintings that are now in the Rijksmuseum?
Yeah.
The baker ended up selling them, I assume?
Yeah, eventually selling them.
Wow.
But during his life, he was such a, an extraordinary artist that he actually had private patrons. He had two patrons in particular, a man named Van Ruyven and his wife, Danute. and they seem to have had almost a buyer's premium, you know, a deal with, they paid him sort of, I don't know, so many hundred guilders, so they would have first dibs at any paintings that he made. And he would earn something like somewhere between 500 to 600 guilders for each painting. Now, if he only sold one or two of those a year, which that seems, you know, and that seems to be the case, because as we've said, we only know of about 37 of his paintings, that's equivalent to 2 years' wages for a middle-class person at that time. So if he sold even one of them, that's your wage for an entire year. So he could support his family on that.
But not when he was in such dire straits.
No,
that he owed
not
four
at the
years
end
worth
of his life.
Of bread money, obviously. Yeah. So you say he died at 43 and then basically was forgotten.
Yeah. For about 200 centuries, everyone forgot who he was. And again, because there were so few paintings of his, even though he did sign them, what art dealers would do if they found any Vermeers would be that they would re-sign them with someone more famous.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so they could actually sell them for money. Now, someone did discover him in the late 1800s, and in fact, one of his most well-known paintings, The Girl with the Pearl Earring, that I'm sure everybody knows, sold for a ridiculously low amount of 2 guilders and sort of 30 cents. I don't know what the cents equivalent is, but that 30 cents was just the buyer's premium. And it was at an auction in The Hague. Filthy dirty. It's quite a small painting, but filthy dirty. But a collector and an art historian saw it for what it was, and they bid for it, and they, you know, they got it at a ridiculous price. But they ended up leaving it to the Moritz House, which is the museum there in The Hague. On his death, the art historian ended up buying it. So, you know.
Yeah, and so then how otherwise did Vermeer come back into popularity?
Oh, well, there was a French art critic who found the view of Delft. He was taken with Vermeer's only townscape, the view of Delft, and he just thought, I need to find out more about this man and sort of start looking, you know, trolling through the archives, the Dutch archives, trying to find more paintings. And he sort of published at the time what was almost a monogram on Vermeer, and from there he just came into the interest of, you know, art historians and the general public.
It's amazing, isn't it, Lorraine, the way that artists can be completely forgotten, ignored, and suddenly they're hot all over again or for the first time.
I know, and you know, and he's such a hot item now. Yeah. And I think the reason for that, Suzanne, is because his subject matter is so modern. You know, it was painted in the 17th century, but when you look at the women and the men in his paintings, because there's a handful of paintings that deal with, you know, a male protagonist, but they speak to us, I think. And I really think that's the key to why he's such an outstanding painter. His work transcends the century it was painted in.
So it was predominantly, I mean, he didn't do a lot of religious imagery, did he? Because that was quite frowned upon in the Netherlands at the
time. Yes, exactly. As I said, it was a Protestant country. It wasn't encouraged, you know, religious images were not encouraged. So he painted more genre scenes, you know, very quiet scenes, generally of women doing household chores, everyday, you know, occurrences, reading letters, looking out a window, pouring milk. But again, you know, we don't know who they are. Mm. We don't know who these women are. And, you know, there's probably about out of his 37 known paintings, you know, maybe 20, 25 of them have women in them.
Mm. So obviously The Girl with a Pearl Earring is one that we would all know about. How did that sort of become so popular, that particular painting, Lorraine?
Oh, well, you know, as you said, art history can be really fickle, you know, unknown at one stage, you know, bargain buy in the late 19th century, you know, poster girl in the 20th. And I think the turning point was in around 1995. There was an exhibition at the, I think it was the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. And it was, you know, full of Vermeer works. It was a bit of a blockbuster Vermeer show. And they used The Girl with the Pearl Earring as their poster girl, literally. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, all over the accompanying posters, all over the catalogues. And it sort of catapulted her into fame. Then, of course, there is the novel by Tracy Chevalier, The Girl with the Pearl Earring, and then the film that starred Scarlett Johansson and Colin Firth as well. And, you know, of course, she's been referenced in all sorts of pop culture and, you know, all the way through. But what's interesting, Suzanne, is that the original title of the painting was actually The Girl with the Turban, not The Girl with the Pearl Earring. Yes. because it's a sort of a genre that was quite common in the 17th century called the trony, which was sort of like a head and shoulders portrait of an exotic character. Mm. And, of course, she's wearing that very exotic turban and that, you know, impossibly huge pearl earring. And that was it.
Lorraine Kipiotis is here from the National Art School. She is, of course, our resident art historian here on Nightlife. We're talking about the painter Vermeer. And if you've ever seen the picture of the girl with the pearl earring, well, you know some of his work at least. So do we know who that girl actually was?
No. She could, you know, it's really interesting because in Tracy Chevalier's book and the film, subsequent film, of course, she plays a servant girl, Greet. She could have been one of Vermeer's daughters. She could have been a servant girl, you know, just sort of dressed up as that particular character, I guess. So, but that's the thing. We don't know who anyone in his paintings are. We can see certain faces that have been repeated, and we also know that he uses particular motifs throughout, you know, a lot of his works, like the pearl earring, for example, Suzanne. He uses that in, I think it's about 9 paintings. We can actually see that pearl earring or the set, the complete set of pearl earrings. And one of the beautiful works that he uses it in is the love letter, which is full of hidden meaning. You spoke a little bit about mystery when you started. And, you know, I think we've also really forgotten how to read paintings. When you look at it, you know, it's called the love letter, and I'll just say as an aside too, a lot of the titles that we use for Vermeer's paintings are actually modern titles that we've given them because that's what it looks like. You know, is it a love letter? How do we know?
Did he give them titles?
He did, but again, very few records,
right,
you know, exist. So quite often, you know, the girl with the turban becomes the girl with the pearl earring because, you know, that's what we've become used to calling her. So, but the love letter, you know, there are things within that painting, little clues that tell us why it's a love letter.
All right, so what are they?
Oh, okay. I'm so glad you asked, Suzanne. Well, you know, just to explain the image to our listeners, it's a woman is sitting down. She's playing a lute-like instrument. It's called a cittern. And first of all, playing music was often a reference to love. Mm-hmm. You know, it was about the notes from one instrument tuning to another instrument, just like the harmony that's, you know, symbolized between two people. And often one of them is missing. And we see in this particular image too, in the foreground, there's actually a musical score sitting down, laid down on one of the chairs. And we realize that it's a musical score for two people. So there's someone missing. First, and also, there's a painting behind her, and Vermeer's very fond of putting paintings in paintings or maps in paintings to give us a clue as to what's happening. And what we see in the painting is a ship sailing on very, very calm waters. So again, this idea of calm waters, stormy waters also relates to the fact of a good love affair as opposed to a tumultuous love affair. There's also, you know, other little clues, like there's a broom and domestic slippers blocking the doorway because, you know, we're actually invited into this scene to see what's going on, but we're blocked from actually coming into the privacy of the scene by this broom. And it also shows us that she has completely ignored her domestic chores because love is on her mind.
Oh, she's swooning. She can't do the sweeping.
I know, she can't do the sweeping. So, so just little hints like that. And I mentioned the pearl earrings that are, you know, used again and again, but she's also wearing this most beautiful yellow jacket that's trimmed with what looks like ermine fur. And we know, again from records, that it was a jacket that belonged to his wife, Caterina Bolnes. And again, he uses that in about, 6 other paintings and has the model, whoever the model might be, actually wearing that jacket.
You're on Nightlife, Suzanne Hill with you, and Lorraine Kipiotis, our art historian, is here. So, Lorraine, you said we've forgotten how to read a painting. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, we look at them and we can appreciate them for what they are on the surface level. You know, a very good painting about a woman being handed a letter to someone, you know, a good painting about people making music together. But there are little clues, iconographic clues in each painting, as I mentioned, you know, the broom, the domestic slippers, the painting within the painting that just throw hints. Mm. But we don't realize that anymore, whereas a very educated viewer in the 17th century would have recognized that and would have thought, oh, yes, I know it's a love letter because of this, this and this in the painting.
Do you think that's just because we don't live in the time and those clues aren't real to us?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also because, well, A, we've forgotten how to read those little symbols, those little clues, and we've got to become almost like detectives to uncover them. But also, I think, Suzanne, we're bombarded with images all the time, and the information about what that image is about is so readily available to us. So, you know, oh, I don't understand this painting, I'll just look it up on Google. You know, I'll just, you know, get a quick fix on it. So, yeah.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. Now, it's true, isn't it? Several of his paintings have become quite notorious and been involved in unsolved mysteries. Tell me about
these. Yes, absolutely. Well, I was just talking about the love letter, and so many of his paintings have actually been stolen but recovered. The love letter was actually cut out of its frame with a potato peeler, rolled up,
A potato peeler,
can you imagine? Tucked up into the back of the thief's pants and then buried in a forest for some time before being recovered.
But why?
Well, I think he was just holding it for ransom.
Right.
You know, and wanted money. But luckily it was recovered. I mean, probably the most famous art heist in the 20th century was the theft from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston when the concert, Vermeer's painting The Concert, was stolen in 1990 along with, I think it was 13 other paintings and never recovered. And it was literally two guys dressed up as guards who just walked in, tied up the real guards, walked out with the paintings. Now, what's interesting is that they're still missing. For a start, okay, and the FBI are still investigating it. And apparently there's a $10 million reward, you know, for information leading to the theft, which would be great, you know, if anyone had any information. But because Isabella Stewart Gardner, whose museum it was in the 19th century, left in her bequest that no paintings should be moved and nothing should replace them in the museum. That if you go to the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum today, you'll see 13 empty spaces in the gallery
because
they can't replace them with anything else.
And so if the rest of the paintings got stolen, you'd literally have an empty gallery.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
I didn't know that. Now, I mean, you would assume when you, Lorraine, that these things would be fairly hard to sell.
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, such famous paintings. Mm. I mean, as well as the Vermeer, there were a couple of Rembrandts, some, you know, modern, impressionist paintings. You couldn't actually on-sell them to anyone because anyone that came into your home would immediately recognize them. I mean, you could, you know, say that they were, you know, a forgery or a copy or whatever.
Mm.
Not a forgery, but you'd claim it was a copy. But certainly it'd be really, really hard. Fun fact was that it was referenced in pop culture. It was actually a reference to it in The Simpsons where the police go in and they realise that it was Monty Burns that actually stole them all from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum and he has them up on his walls.
Yeah, that well-known art lover.
Yeah.
Lorraine Kibiotis is here. Now, you mentioned, Lorraine, not all of his known works are going to be in this Rijksmuseum exhibition. Obviously, the concert can't be there because it was stolen. What's going on with the rest of them that aren't going to be
there?
Sure.
Well, there's, I think, three from the Metropolitan Museum in New York that can't be lent because of the terms of their bequest. They have to stay in the museum. For some reason, I think the museum in Vienna can't lend one of Vermeer's standout paintings, The Art of Painting. It's extraordinary. I think the astronomer from the Louvre is being lent to another institution, and there are, I think, two from London in the Royal Collection, possibly, that weren't on loan. But
Most galleries, if they can, actually try to cooperate when somewhere like the Rijksmuseum is going to put on a massive retrospective like this?
Yeah, they do. They do. Because I think it's a bit of kudos for their own institution.
Mm.
Because if people obviously want to then go, you know, back and have a look at that work. You know, for example, I can't go to the one at the Rijksmuseum. If I wanted to see all of Vermeer's in the world, I'd have to travel across three continents, you know, possibly five or six different countries to actually see all of the Vermeer's. But it's something I would do, being a Vermeer fan. So it's good to know also where these works are coming from.
How many have you seen already?
I've seen out of his possible 35, 37, I've seen 10.
Wow, you've got some work to do, Lorraine.
Yeah, I know. I've got to be travelling again. Those two COVID years really, really stopped me.
Now, we're talking about the painter Johannes Vermeer in our art history chat tonight. Now, there are some Vermeers that people are not sure are actually Vermeers.
Oh, yes. There's a very interesting case at the moment, actually. The Girl with the Flute, it's actually the tiniest of Vermeer's works. It's only about 20 centimetres by 18 centimetres. It belongs in the National Gallery of Art in Washington, but they've loaned it to the Rijksmuseum. Now, the National Gallery of Washington have decided it's not a real Vermeer. Not a Vermeer. It's a very good copy. It was possibly done by someone who lived at the same time as Vermeer, was training under Vermeer perhaps. But the Rijksmuseum have said it is a real Vermeer and we want it for our exhibition. So it was loaned. The terms of the loan was not as a Vermeer, but the Rijksmuseum is showing it as a Vermeer.
Right. Now, I understand that during COVID, the Washington Museum actually had the opportunity to look at their whole collection. Is that when they came up with this theory?
Yeah. They had a really close look at it. They had an opportunity to actually put their Vermeer collection under a microscope, and they used Pioneer Imaging. That's, the technology used to map minerals on the moon and Mars, apparently. And they found, a number of things. They found very awkward brushwork, which is very unlike, other Vermeer works. Very, very heavy-handed. The paint looked like it almost pooled and dripped onto the canvas, and very unlike the very fine top layers that Vermeer usually does. There were also broken bristles lodged in the paint, suggesting that the artist had used some force or a very poorly made brush. And even the composition, they said, was quite blocky and awkward. But she is exactly the same girl in another Vermeer painting called The Girl with the Red Hat. So, again, whether that was one of his daughters, a regular model, we don't know. But it does point to the fact that if Vermeer didn't make it, then, yes, perhaps someone who was quite close to him. Maybe even, Suzanne, his eldest daughter, because it's not uncommon that, daughters born into an artist's family would often be taught how to paint as well, even though when she got married she would never have been expected to stay a painter, to remain a painter.
And so why were the Rijksmuseum so determined that it was a real Vermeer?
Well, I think it's museum versus museum, expert versus expert. And maybe they just wanted to get, well, I'm sure they wanted to get as many Vermeers as possible together for this incredible blockbuster exhibition.
Yeah. I find it extraordinary that given the chance, that the museums, they put their art on the wall and they're not content for it just to hang there. They want to look at it and explore it when they get the chance.
Oh, absolutely. And, again, going back to that idea of mystery, there are so many unsolved mysteries in art. And it's, museums are quite lucky because they do have the technical staff where they can look at works. And, even if you look at the COVID period that we've just been through, that did give them a couple of years of closures where they could look at work really, really closely.
So I know we've sort of sounded like detectives trying to solve a mystery, uncovering secrets and hidden messages about the life and times of Vermeer. What else can we learn or discover looking at those paintings?
Well, okay, I mentioned that he puts paintings within paintings, which is always gives us a little bit hint. But he was also amazing at actually putting in maps and contemporary maps in the backs of his paintings, the background of his paintings. And they actually add more clues also to the meaning of the work. I mean, there's some beautiful works such as Woman in Blue reading a letter or A Young Woman with a Picture where there's a map in the background. And in that case, it's about an absent or a distant lover or husband, especially in the one where the woman's reading the letter. You can tell that her husband is off somewhere else, possibly in this place that's shown in the map. But, Vermeer depicts it with such a cartographer's skill, the maps itself, that they've actually been identified as contemporary maps by some very important map makers at the time.
Wow, because, of course, back then maps were much more famous than they are now,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, yeah. And Holland was actually almost the centre of map making in Europe, and there were some extraordinary map makers there, like, Claes Jans Visscher, and there are a few of his maps that appear, especially, I mentioned a painting, The Art of Painting, which I think is, for me, Vermeer's standout work. I love this work. This is the work that tells me that he's a painter's painter. And here, the map is really telling us so much about what Vermeer is trying to tell us in the work. Now, it's a painting where the artist has his back turned towards us. He's painting a model, and the model is actually dressed up as the muse of history, Cleo. So she's wearing laurel leaves around her head. She's dressed in this beautiful blue. She's holding what looks like to be a trumpet and a copy of Thucydides, which was a history book. So we know, again, by reading those little hints, who she is. But behind her, she's framed by a huge map. And this is a map which actually shows the independent political states of the Dutch Republic. Now, it's quite a recent map, but it wasn't quite up to date because just after the map had been made, the Dutch Republic was split into two, the independent Dutch Republic, which we know now as the Netherlands, and what is now, I guess, Belgium, then Flanders, that still belonged to the Spanish Habsburg dynasty. And there's a crease in the map that actually splits those two areas that Vermeer has put in his map to show the political, you know, split in the two states. But what the map tells us is something even more. It's telling us, yes, a little bit about the political state of what's happening in the Netherlands there. But allegorically, it's giving significance to the state of the artist, you know, and what Vermeer wants to be remembered for. Because here we've got the Muse of History. She's being shown against a map. And Vermeer here is showing us that the artist who has an awareness of history and has an ability to paint elevated subjects is bringing eternal fame to his native city and country, but also eternal fame to himself as well by being placed against where he comes from, but also being shown with the Muse of History. He will be remembered forever in history for what he's actually done. And this is really the role of the artist, to leave something for posterity.
I just find it extraordinary, Lorraine, that you know when you were talking about forgetting how to read paintings, but most of us would have no idea, right? We'd go look at this painting, go, there's a, you know,
it's whatever. It's great, it's really lovely.
Whatever, you know, move on. But you, if you know all of this, the painting means so much more. It's kind of a shame we're not all art historians, isn't it?
I know. And but, you know, you delve even further and there's, you know, there's a mask sitting on the table that tells us this painting's a little bit about deception, because you realise also that whilst he's represented an artist in the painting, that may not be him, because Vermeer, the real artist, is standing outside the painting. He's painting a work about painting.
Yeah.
And, you know, therefore he's telling us also a little bit about the deception of the artist's craft. So, you know, it's quite lovely once you start delving into, you know, the layers. And, you know, there's another, the other great artist of the 17th century is the Spanish artist Velázquez. And he does a little bit of the same thing in his work, Las Meninas, tells us about the art of painting, about what it is to be an artist.
Mm. Mm. Look, finally, Lorraine, I mean, I know we've got more we could touch on, but we're running out of time. Just how does his painting make you feel?
Oh, look, as I've said, I'm one of his greatest fans. I love it. I often look at his works and they, to me, they look almost like stills in a film. You know, they're almost, and that's what makes them a little bit modern as well. Of course, Vermeer is not thinking about film. Film hadn't been invented then, but they're so real. They're so alive. It's easy to think that it's a snapshot in time, that there was a moment before whatever happened in the painting happens and a moment after where life just keeps going on. And to me, I think that's the real secret behind why Vermeer is so popular. He is a 17th century painter, but he succeeded in transforming a momentary activity into a timeless vision.
And Lorraine, have we ever had a Vermeer visit Australia?
Yes. Yes, we did. Yeah, we had a blockbuster exhibition in, I think it was in Melbourne, on the Dutch Republic, the golden age of the Dutch Republic. And I think we actually had the love letter come to Australia.
Oh. Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, in the meantime, I think you've got some more travelling to do.
I'm going to go start planning it now, Suzanne.
All right. Well, you can go away, but you need to come back in another month and talk to us about art again. Lorraine Kipiotis is our regular art historian here on Nightlife. Thank you again for coming in.
Thanks, Suzanne.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.